Now, on this Invest Talk podcast, Justin Klein listens to your questions.
I had a question about the stock L'Oreal, L-R-L-C.
And provides unbiased answers.
What I like is its geographical reach, broad diversification.
Invest Talk, over 29 million downloads and counting.
Hey guys, first time caller, new listener, love the podcast. What are your thoughts on dividend funds for long term?
Call anytime, 24/7, 888-99-CHART.
This podcast is produced by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. KPP Financial. Independent thinking, shared success. And now today's podcast.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome to Invest Talk. This is our Thursday, February 4th, 2021 edition of Invest Talk. I welcome you all this hour, and I'm going to do my best to keep this show fruitful for you. And the way that I do that is through our mission of independent thinking and shared success. So I'm going to bring you market commentary, process explanations, educational segments, stock commentary. This will be done with my knowledge that I've accumulated over the last couple of decades, as well as the data I have in front of myself that will help guide me into helping you understand where I'm coming from, right? Because it's not just the qualitative analysis, which that's a lot of experience, right? Understanding how markets work, asset classes work, companies work, etc., etc., but also bringing good data and data that's useful. And that's what we are here to help you do and just give you the facts. Now, I'm Justin Klein, and of course, we encourage you to contact us with your finance and investment questions. You get to shape the show to your liking if you do call. So you can call and interact with us right now during our live stream program that airs every day, 4 to 5 Pacific time. It also airs as a radio show in the Bay Area as well. Or you can leave a question anytime in our Invest Talk voice bank. And that number never changes, 888-99-CHART. So let's get right to our first caller question now.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. I've been listening to you guys for about 3 years, and I absolutely love all the information you provide. I had a question about the stock L'Oreal, L-R-L-C-Y. I'm in the beauty industry, so I'm very familiar with this company, and I have been looking for a place to get in this year, hoping that it would pull back, and it looks like it has a little bit. I'm just wondering what your evaluation is of it and at what price point you would pick it up. Thank you for all your advice and all the information you share to all of us every day. Have a good rest of your day. Bye.
All right. Great question. This is L'Oreal, and this company is headquartered in France. And let's take a look at their business overall. She's right. They are in the beauty industry. About 35% of the revenue comes from skincare, 26% makeup, 25% hair care, and 9% fragrance. 28% of its revenue is in Western Europe, 25% here in North America, 47% in emerging markets. And let's see, that broken up Pacific, Asia Pacific's 32, et cetera. So what I like is its geographical reach, broad diversification, and you're actually getting here exposure to foreign currencies, right? Because the vast majority of their revenues come outside of the U.S. and outside of the dollar. So if the dollar does climb, that's going to be a nice tailwind to earnings and profits in dollar terms. Now, certainly, their business has been upended because of COVID to some degree, right, with salons shutting down and so many places where you go and buy skincare products, hair care products, etc. But despite that, they still actually were able to grow earnings in 2020. So that was pretty interesting. Now, it's a $200 billion market cap company, and its trailing 12-month free cash flow is about $4.3 billion. In 2019, it was $5 billion. So, you know, free cash flow did get hit a bit over the last 12 months. But that should turn around, right? That's during a COVID, we're going to be closer to the end of this pandemic today than we are to the beginning, so that's good. And historically, this is a name whose return on equity has averaged over the last decade about 15-16%. And that's very attractive. Modest amount of debt. I like that. Return on assets have hovered around that 10% level as well. So I like that. So there's a lot about this company that I do like. Right. So free cash flow per share, though, is $1.69 in 2019, but it is a $71 stock. So it's not exactly cheap, I'll say that, but it is a solid company. It is a very solid company. And I would say that it has had a recent pullback. Let me look at the chart real quick. Yeah, it's pulled back to its 100-day moving average, which it's shown support at over the past year. And so this is a good buying opportunity from a technical perspective, but it still is a little rich in valuation. And so that for that reason, I don't love it, but I kind of like it. Now, as the program and podcast moves along today, I know you want strategies to help deal with the market volatility and the uncertainty that presents itself here in 2021. So I'm here ready to take your calls at 888-99-CHART. Now let's check in on the market today. S&P up 41 points closed, right at an all-time high, just above it. We've retraced the recent market pullback, and technically we remain relatively strong, right? We had good economic data, but we still see, what was interesting today, we still see a rollover of the growth versus value trade over the last couple of days. You had a rally in the growth stocks from mid-January into basically Thursday. Into Tuesday of this week. And the last couple of days, you've seen a big reversal. So I'm seeing some weakness in that. The 10-year ticking higher. We're kind of marching higher here. It looks like the 10-year wants to get to that 1.4 level. If you've watched my YouTube videos analysis every Friday, you'll see kind of the charts that I've been posting and discussing. We're likely to get up there. Now, how will that impact the market? At what level does that kind of break things? And that's the history of where Fed policy and interest rates have gone, right? Where they allow rates to rise either through policy action or through natural markets floating higher. And that's what you're seeing here with so much supply of treasuries coming on and not quite enough QE to sop it all up. And so rates are marching higher. And I think they're okay. The Fed is okay with allowing rates to kind of float a little bit up as long as it doesn't break the market. And as long as it's a slow march, I don't think it will until you get to some sort of mitigating level to cost of capital, where the borrowing rate for corporations and just across the economy becomes too high, right? If mortgage rates start to break out to 3.5-4% to kind of from where they're at now of about 3%, that might start to be an issue for the economy. But so far, we're not there yet. But pretty interesting, wild market that we're seeing, and technically, we remain relatively strong. Now, you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein, and we're into February of the new year, and a lot of people probably couldn't wait until 2020 was over. Tough time, but with all the changes we see happening, it's important to remember that during periods of market uncertainty, the task of building your financial freedom must always continue. You cannot afford a backslide, so that's what we are here to help you do, to reach your goal of personal financial freedom. And you need good information and effective strategies, and we should talk about whatever is on your mind. So we're taking your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, where InvestTalk hosts and KPP principals Steve Peasley and Justin Klein practice parallel investing. That means Steve and Justin's accounts participate with client investments at equal prices and percentages. You can learn more about parallel investing at investtalk.com. The phone lines are open. Steve and Justin welcome your questions. Call now, 888-99-CHART.
Now, we love recorded caller questions and, of course, our live calls, which we're going to go to one now. Cherie in Dallas looking at Qualcomm.
Hi, Justin. Thank you for the wonderful show. And I'm trying.
No problem.
Now that it has come down, I want to know if this is a good time to buy. Just want to know your thoughts on
that. Well, it was down pretty sizably today, about almost 9% on the day, $14 to $147.97 at the close. And I believe that was earnings. Yeah. So their earnings were out, and it was more about the guidance, which was not as bullish as the market had been hoping. And so that's why you saw this drop, right? Their earnings itself were good. Revenue up 62%, earnings up 119%. And you would say, well, that's a great quarter. And that's certainly true. But a lot of that was priced in with a move from 58, which is its 52-week low, all the way to 167 spot 94, its 52-week high. So a lot of that optimism around that was built in. And this is exactly what you see where a company's reports earnings that look good on the surface, but their expectations for the future year or future quarters are not quite up to the snuff of the overall market expectations. And so that's why you've seen this drop. Now, we have a value somewhere closer to $120 a share, which is about where the 200-day moving average is. And that's the area that I would be targeting for a potential pullback for an entry. Because I think you're going to start that here. Technically, it's rolled over after this move today. Typically, it takes 3 days as well for the market to fully digest the news. And so that's what I'd be looking for, is how bearish the next couple days are. You know, if we break the 140 level, I think we're definitely going down to around the 125. So that's an area that I would be looking for it for a longer-term purchase. It'd be around the 125 level. That would be a target for me to pick it up, but not quite yet. Be a little patient. Be a little patient. Thanks for the call, Cherie. Now, my focus point today concerns the story, service industries in the U.S. expanded by the most in nearly 2 years, and that was the great headline news in the markets today and the underlying economy. And so I'm going to pack what that looked like and where the pros came from and where the cons came from as well, because all these economic reports have pros and cons that are deeper than just the headlines, right? The headlines are the headlines, and it's easy to look at those and think you understood the picture. But if you dig in, you'll oftentimes get a mixed bag. And that was certainly the case here, but also was better than expected. So we're going to look at the 14 service industries that reported growth during the month and which ones those were. So I'll drill down on those numbers. Also, fiscal support. Let's talk a little bit about what is proposed in Congress right now that they're batting around, right? President Biden is trying to get through some checks or a stimulus package that is about $1.9 trillion. How does that compare to the stimulus from last year? And would it be prudent in this environment to do something that large? Or would a bipartisan bill make more sense? What would the pros and cons be of each? So I'm going to look at that. Next, the GameStop mania last week really put the spotlight on online brokers and where they're making money, right? And so we're going to unpack that and show you which brokers are making the most in relation to their assets, when it comes to making money on trades, right? Order flow, for example. And then lastly, what will regulators do? What will regulators do after the GameStop fiasco? We're going to look at what maybe rules they might put in to prevent this in the future. Now you're listening to Invest Talk. I'm Justin Klein. And for investors, the need to remain vigilant never ends. And naturally, you will have finance and investment questions. And that's why we're here, is to answer them for you. So I encourage you to give us a call, be a participant. And that is very vital to this show. So we're taking your calls live at 888-99-CHART.
It's a new year, and building your financial future takes information and commitment. So you'll have finance and investment questions for Steve Peasley and Justin Klein. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's head over to Moreno Valley and talk with Charles. He's looking at Telefonica.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Justin, you own it or you're looking
to buy
it?
I'd like to know your opinion.
Are you looking to buy it or do you own it?
I'm looking to buy. I am concerned about the amount of debt they have.
Yeah, well, this is a $24 billion market cap, and they do have about $100 billion in liabilities, so they do have some exposure on that front, but they also have a fairly consistent business, right? Their free cash flow is consistent, and they, even during a downturn, they haven't really had a big drop in profitability. And so while I think the dividend is likely to potentially go down, right? It has actually fallen. It pays it in euros, so it fluctuates a little bit each year. But they were paying 90 cents a share in 2015, and now it's down to about 39 cents a share.
Oh, my.
So don't expect that dividend to increase anytime soon because of that debt. They look like they're trying to pay down that debt more than they're trying to increase that dividend. But I don't think they're also going to cut it. It's pretty much been flat since 2017. So I think the dividend is going to be there. I think it's going to take some time to pay down that debt. But I like their cash flows. I like their cash flows. To me, this is a great, cheap, foreign dividend payer that probably won't grow its dividend. It's going to be focused on repairing or improving its balance sheet. Let's just say that. So if you're okay with that dividend, you're okay with it not increasing, I like the name. Technically, it's hit a massive low back in, let's see, when was that? It was in November, right? It was record low of about $3.23. And now we're at $4.54. So it's had a nice rally, but you're starting to see the technicals improve dramatically. So I like it. Just don't expect that dividend to go up anytime soon. Thanks for the call, Charles. Now, my focus point today concerns the story, service industries in the U.S. expand by the most in nearly 2 years, and 14 service industries reported growth during the month. The top five were led by real estate. So real estate activity in the month of January was relatively strong. Rental and leasing. Construction. So that's not a shock. Shock that construction is doing well in an environment where inventories are low, right? There's not a lot of foreclosures because of the foreclosure moratorium, and a lot of people just don't want to move, especially during a pandemic. And so construction industry has done fairly well. Wholesale trade also was up, so replenishing the inventories in the economy that have run fairly low. So that's done well. So the service industry as a whole came in better than expected. The index rose to 58.7. So anything above 50 is growth. In December, it was slightly lower by 1 point lower, 57.7. What was interesting is that economists expected a decline of about 1 point to 56.7, which was a little curious to me because most of the service side of the economy has been depressed since COVID, and a lot of the reasons is because of the shutdowns and limitations around services, right? Hotel and leisure and hospitality, which includes hotels, that expanded the most in 11 months. in January. And that should not be a shock. Why? Because December was a month where there was a lot of shutdowns because COVID cases were surging. And January ended on a note where cases were dropping and restrictions were being eased, especially on restaurants across the country. And so it was curious to me that economists got this so wrong. It was pretty obvious that there was going to be at least an uptick of some kind in the supply index, the services index, excuse me, because of those factors, but they kind of missed it. Now, the new orders at service companies rose to 61.8. That's the strongest level since July. Remember, July was kind of when the first lockdowns started to ease and you had the big jump. And the backlogs for new orders also picked up. So it was very interesting. The negatives were that import prices rose and companies were restocking inventories in a big way because just supply chains remain disrupted to some degree. Obviously, it varies depending on the industry. And export demand, though, that contracted at the fastest pace since May. So that was probably the biggest negative, was that export demand, even though the dollar was weak, you would think weak dollar should drive exports. It didn't really. And what's the reason for that? Maybe that has to do with lockdowns in Europe. That's probably a big factor. But very interesting report. Better than expected, but I think the expectations were off. Doesn't make sense why they were so sour. Now, we're heading into a break. So Chris from Washington State, hang on. We'll get to your question next at 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
Do we have a disadvantage, us investors, on the West Coast as opposed to the people that are closer to the action? They're right there in New York.
And what's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Justin right now on InvestTalk.
Of all the finance and investing podcasts and all the downloads in all the world, you've discovered InvestTalk.
Hey guys, I just started checking out your podcast and I've been really enjoying the content.
I was just wondering if you could explain what a spinoff is.
I'm interested in two IPOs.
And since InvestTalk hosts Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are committed to answering your questions with their unique blend of expert insight and unbiased guidance, you've got to ask yourself one question. Why haven't you called InvestTalk?
Hey, Steve and Justin, this is Josh calling from New York, first-time caller.
You know you listen. You know you should call. You know you want to call.
Would you consider equities to be a hedge against inflation?
You'll get a reliable answer and the same positive feeling that tens of thousands of InvestTalk callers have already experienced.
Thank you, and I appreciate what you guys do.
Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Markets react to uncertainty. Are you prepared? Is your portfolio balanced? Is it optimized? Your financial future depends on the answers to those questions. Justin Klein is here now and ready to talk with you. Call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's head over to Chris in Washington State. He's looking at Orbital Energy Group. Do you own it or are you looking to buy it?
Yeah, I have a small position in it right now, and it was kind of an impulse buy because, you know, looking at the energy and solar power, it's up about, I'd say, 120%. I was wondering if it'd be a long-term hold or if I should just get rid of it before it tanks because I don't know if they're making much money.
Yeah, well, the history of this company is that they don't make money, right? They haven't made money since 2014. They've lost money every year since and pretty much every quarter since. Now, this stock has taken off because it looks like they were part of a team that looks like are going to decommission some coal power plants and turn them into solar energy farms, and, you know, they're in the green space. Now, I don't know how much revenue they're actually going to get from this partnership, right? I think that's the big question. Trailing 12 months, they did $13 million in revenue, and they're certainly growing their revenue nicely, but it's not translating into profits. The two things that make me weary about this are the fact that they cannot wait to sell shares. So they've done it twice now. The end of last year, December 31st, they sold kind of a private placement deal for $1.80 per share of 5.5 million shares. So they raised about $10 million there. And now they just filed a shelf offering up to $150 million in securities. So they're trying to sell a mix of both common shares, preferred shares, debt, securities, warrants, etc. And they're trying to cash in on this rise in the stock price. So if they were so bullish about their prospects and thought that their business was just going to take off to the stratosphere and their profits were going to take off to the stratosphere, I don't think they'd be raising that much money, right? Their market cap's only $277 million. So they're trying to increase their market cap by somewhere in the neighborhood of 50% just by issuing more shares. So you're going to dilute shareholders by 50% at these prices. And that's what gives me the big red flag, that they don't have a history of making money. And although they have one nice partnership, they're eager to sell shares on any rally. And that's a big red flag for me. So I would be taking, at bare minimum, your initial investment off the table and having a probably 15% trailing stop on this name. Thanks for the call, Chris. 888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. That was Orbit Energy Group, OEG is the symbol. Now, let's touch on fiscal spending. And I've said this before many, many times, that fiscal policy is now driving the economy. Clearly, politicians are no longer interested in fiscal responsibility. And I'm not saying this is one side or the other, it's just bipartisan now. It's just, how do they want to spend it, right? They want to spend it on tax cuts, military spending, which is probably what the right want to spend it on more than anything. And the left wants to send checks to people, right? And there's certainly a balancing act that needs to be walked in order to avoid crippling inflation and also avoid social unrest, right? There's a lot of people that are kind of fed up with the system. And you've seen that with the summer riots and marches, and also the march on the White House, right? So there's various aspects, both up and down the country, that are creating problems from a social perspective. And fiscal spending, if done well, will boost the overall productivity and growth of the economy, while also addressing some social issues, right? Social unrest that could potentially be brewing in the economy as well, or in the country. Now, last year, Congress spent about $4 trillion fighting the COVID crisis. And the current proposal is $1.9 trillion, so about half of what was spent last year. Now, Republicans want to spend about $600 billion. That's their counterproposal to President Biden. And the big question is, should President Biden try to come to some agreement, somewhere maybe in the neighborhood of $900 billion, something like that, or fight for and go through budget reconciliation, do the $1.9 trillion, and not really care what the other side thinks? Now, the risk of doing that is stoking inflation and not having the ability to pass infrastructure spending, because it would further stoke the inflation flames. So remember, 20% of income last year for Americans came from government transfer payments, right? Unemployment checks, PPP, etc. So stimulus was high last year, and in order to keep the economy kind of moving, you're going to have some stimulus this year. It's just, what is the right amount, I think, is the big question. So universal handouts versus state aid, all these things need to be weighed and how much it will spark inflation and maybe limit further political capital that could be used down the line on different types of infrastructure spending. I think that's a big question with this fiscal aid. Now let's go to Larry in New Jersey looking at Procter & Gamble.
Hi, Justin. How's it going? So I got into Procter & Gamble, and I guess it was sometime last year. It was in the, you know, like the low 110s area, and I wanted to kind of go in again and buy more, but it just hasn't kind of went back to those levels. So I wasn't sure kind of what would be that next, you know, if you want to increase your position, if there's a good number to maybe target.
Well, our value on Procter & Gamble is somewhere around that 110 level. Now, it's underperformed basically since November. It had a big reversal candle on November 9th, and now and that was starting at $145 a share, and now we're at $129. So modest pullback here from its 52-week high, down about 12%. And we're below the 200-day moving average. On a weekly chart, we are, let's see, we're right at the 50-week moving average, so that's certainly going to be support. But this looks like it wants to at least go to about the 122 level, technically. And the reason it's underperformed is because it's in part of the market that doesn't tend to do very well when two things are happening. When interest rates are rising, right, it is kind of a bond proxy in a lot of ways, right, because Procter & Gamble's dividend is fairly safe, fairly consistent, yields about 2.5% now. So when interest rates rise, that can be a headwind to the consumer staples space, and it's pretty much the biggest holding in the consumer staples sector. And then you have a weaker dollar. Now that can help it if it is diversified internationally, which it is, but your money flow is going into kind of the bigger cyclical names, and so that's been dragging down Procter & Gamble. So our value is around that 110 level, which would be closer to where it was in the lows in March. So I think it's a little overvalued for a company that's not going to grow very much, but long term, it's a good company. Its cash flows are going to be consistent. It's going to pay that dividend. It's probably going to raise it modestly each year. So if you're looking as a long-term hold and you're going to get decent returns with not a ton of volatility, Procter & Gamble, it's hard to argue against it. But a fair value is closer to that 110 level. Now let's keep the pace moving along. Go back to the InvestTalk Voice Bank. Callers invest their time leaving a question, and Steve and I promise to provide unbiased answers. This came in earlier at 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. Big fan of the show. I just wanted to get your opinion on uranium mining ETF, URNM. Thank you, and have a good day.
All right. He's looking at URNM, and this is the North Shore Global Uranium Mining ETF. And let me see, is this holding underlying shares or the uranium miners? Yeah, it looks like the miners. The top, it's very concentrated. The top holding is National Atomic Company Gazprom. I don't even know how to say it, but I believe they're in Kazakhstan, is where a lot of the uranium is mined, 15%. Cameco, which is in Canada, the largest uranium miner in the world, 13.7%. Uranium Participation Corp, about 10%. So you're very focused on those. And I like this. I think the uranium space is a good place to invest in. I think there's going to be a turn. If you're talking about green energy, getting off of fossil fuels, right? That's what the climate scientists are saying, that that's what we need to do. And whether we get countries on board or not, the countries that do get on board, if they're looking at it fairly, you know that you can't be 100% green anytime soon, right? You can't live off of solar panels and wind farms and hydroelectric power. there's just way too many people, way too high of electric demand in order to keep up with the country, especially a developed country like the U.S. And so while we've had some disasters, right, Fukushima and the other Chernobyl, right, so we've had a few disasters, but overall, if you look at all of the nuclear power plants around the world, they're fairly safe. They're very safe. And even the disasters, yeah, it's bad for that region, but it's very, very small. And China is building a lot of these nuclear reactors. And so the demand for uranium, to me, is increasing. Prices still remain near record lows, but are now trending higher. And so I like the uranium space. It's, to me, a great place to invest. And this is a good way to get broad diversification. Now, I'm Justin Klein. You're listening to Invest Talk, and you are not alone. In January, our Invest Talk downloads surpassed 917,000, which is a record for us. And I think we're going to hit 1 million next month. And that brings our total downloads over the course of the program to more than 29 million. So we're going to hit the 30 million mark this month. So we appreciate all of our listeners, both here in the U.S. as well as around the world, whether you're in Canada, Germany, China, Switzerland, Japan, or any other country that's out there. We love you all. We appreciate it. And in the past year alone, we've had over 234,000 downloads from a place like the UK alone. And this may surprise you that we also have InvestTalk downloads from Saudi Arabia, Russia, Thailand, and Korea. So Steve and I thank you for downloading InvestTalk and telling your friends and family members about our free investing and finance podcast. Please keep the calls, questions, and emails coming in. We love them all, and we appreciate it. And, of course, you're welcome to call our KPP Financial offices in Irvine, California at 800-557-5461. We would love to help you. But for now, our phone lines are open at 888-99-CHART.
InvestTalk is always made better when our listeners contribute their questions.
Hi, guys. Lee from North Carolina here. I had a question about Stitch Fix, ticker SFIX.
So tell your friends and family members they can interact in real time with Steve Peasley and Justin Klein during the InvestTalk live stream program between 4 and 5 p.m. Pacific time.
Hey, Justin, Steve. This is Phil in Washington, D.C. Love you guys. I've learned so much.
Or they can leave their questions anytime, 24/7, in the InvestTalk voice bank.
Look forward to hearing you guys on the podcast. Thanks.
Remember, for live or recorded questions, the number never changes. 888-99-CHART.
Hey, guys. First-time caller, new listener. Love the podcast. Got two questions here, kind of unrelated, both for IRA. One, what are your thoughts on dividend funds for long-term? Two, what are your thoughts on the cannabis industry, specifically Aphria, APHA, and Trulieve, TCNNF? Both seem to have pretty good balance sheets. Growth looks good. I know there's a lot of legislation to decriminalize or legalize cannabis in many states. So I'm wondering what your perspective on both of those are. And I know they're both different sizes, but I'm interested in both. Keep up the good work. Looking forward to hearing your answer. Thanks.
All right, looking at dividend funds, I will say they're not all treated equal. Some are better than others, but I do tend to like companies that pay dividends, and thus dividend-focused funds, especially dividend growth funds, I think are the best type of kind of set-and-forget-it type of equity exposure investments over the long term, because they're going to be invested in and focused in companies that earn profits, earn cash flow, and thus pay dividends. And so I like that. Now you're looking at Aphria and Trulieve, and we like Trulieve. I think that's definitely better. One of the big reasons is because it's domiciled here in the U.S. And I think that's where the biggest upside for the investments is here in the U.S. because Canada has legalized it already. So there's not really that much upside in my mind to those type of investments. And I think once these domestic cannabis names are put onto our exchanges, I think you're going to see a bump up there. Now, which one is the best? I think Trulieve is up. Trulieve is up there. I don't know if it's the best in the country, but certainly one that we're positive on than the negative. So I like Trulieve overall. This is InvestTalk. I'm Justin Klein. We have one goal here, to help you achieve your own particular version of financial freedom. And our work continues after this final break. So get your questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
You are listening to Invest Talk. Every Friday on the program and the podcast, Steve Peasley shares highlights from the newest edition of the KPP Premium Newsletter. Listen Fridays to Invest Talk. And now, Steve and Justin welcome your calls and questions. 888-99-CHART.
Hello, Mr. Steve and Mr. Justin. This is Jeff from Alabama. I'd like to get your opinion on VNQ, Vanguard Real Estate ETF. Thanks very much.
This is VNQ, the Vanguard Real Estate ETF, and this is a solid way to get broad diversification in the REIT space. You're getting a lot of different names. Let's see, 176 equity holdings, about 46% of the total assets are in the top 10 holdings. You're looking at American Tower is the top holding, which is a company that leases out cell phone tower space in that industry. So not huge yield on that company, but overall the ETF is yielding about 4%. It's okay. It's not the best exposure to REITs out there. It's not the worst. It's about average within the space, pretty low cost, expense ratio 0.12%. And so if you're just trying to get broad diversification, you could definitely do worse, probably do a little better either as well. Let's go to Jamie, in Palo Alto, looking at British Petroleum.
Yes, Justin, I was trying to get your opinion actually on BP at the moment. I got in at about $22, and over the last few days has gone down, or probably the last month. And I just wanted to get your opinion, see, I know you guys recommend in the energy sector. Mm-hmm. So is this something that I should take the opportunity and buy more shares, or do you think I should look for another company?
Yeah, I would look for another company. I don't think BP has a lot of future in the oil space. And it's not really starting to move a lot like the oil space either, right? It's actually broken down. If you do a ratio between BP and XLE, the energy ETF, it's at now a 52-week low because energy has started to do better than BP. They're divesting assets. They're investing, I believe, in green energy. And so this really isn't a great oil play, to be honest with you. And so I think you can do much, much better in another name. Revenue's down 33% year over year, earnings down 96%. So they have a stretched balance sheet. Obviously, they have the issues, legacy issues with Deepwater Horizon, and this would be pretty low on my list of the oil names that I would be investing in. So I would be selling it, taking your loss, and reinvesting into companies that are doing better and have a better balance sheet and a better path for growth.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thanks for the call. Now let's lastly touch on GameStop and what could potentially come down the pipe from regulators, excuse me. Now, many brokerage firms and trading firms say it is misunderstood and that the selling for order flow business model is actually good for traders and execution. Now, I said this on the Monday show, but maybe you hadn't listened to it, but the history of sale for order flow goes all the way back to the early 90s, and actually Bernie Madoff was the pioneer. Remember, Bernie Madoff, he didn't just have a multi-billion dollar Ponzi scheme. He actually had a legitimate business on the other side, right? He worked for the NASDAQ. I think he was the president of NASDAQ, if I remember correctly, and he was one of the early practitioners with Bernard L. Madoff Investment Securities. Now, Robinhood agreed to pay $65 million to settle an SEC allegations that it misled its customers about its reliance on these payments for order flow, and touting that its execution quality while filling orders at inferior prices, basically saying, hey, you're getting great execution, when in reality they were not. And so the SEC has reviewed this many times since the early 90s, and they continue to condone the practices. There's a lot of lobbyists that are in there making sure that this isn't banned. Now, this has allowed a lot of new traders to get in, not have a lot of friction with trading, zero commissions on small dollar amounts. That definitely helps the little trader overall. But it also makes it easier to make mistakes, and you obviously take more risk. And so Robinhood, despite them being relatively young, is the second largest seller of payment for order flow. And they don't have a lot of other revenue otherwise. So I encourage all of you, move away from Robinhood. I'm Justin Klein. This completes another Invest Talk program. CPZ and I thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and family members about our free podcast downloads. We post a new program each weekday shortly after the end of our live stream broadcast, which concludes at 5 p.m. Pacific time. Get your free downloads anytime at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, and InvestTalk.com. Be sure to rate and review. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. Good night.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein Pavlis Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461.